Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good to be with you this day. It is a chilly day in St. Louis, but we're going to talk with some friends from Ghana today. So it's a little bit warmer there today, and we're going to talk about Lutheran Bible translators and the work that they're doing in Ghana and hear about missionary family life with our friends, the Federwitz family. Hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. You can find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin in the sponsor section on our website. Go to kfuo.org and look for CUW in the sponsor section there on our website. Go check it out. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin. Joining me in the studio this morning in a Gust group, we have the Federwitz family joining us with Paul, Allie, Hannah, Levi, and Eden Federwitz, and all spending time with us, spending some time traveling across the U.S. and sharing about their work in Ghana with Lutheran Bible translators. Paul, welcome to Faith and Family. Good to have you in studio this morning.
Thank you very much. We're glad to be here.
It's good to see the whole family and good to see you guys again. Allie, welcome.
Thank you.
And let's see, who else do we have here? Do we have Hannah over here?
Yes.
Good morning, Hannah. Good to have you in studio this morning.
Thanks.
Hi, Levi. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good. Good to have you in studio.
Thanks.
And where's Eden? Eden's way over there. Good morning, Eden. Can you say good morning? Good to have you in the studio with us this morning, and excited to be talking about your life as missionaries serving in Ghana. Now, Paul, tell us about where you're serving with Lutheran Bible Translators.
Okay, for the last, I guess it's about 9 years now, we've been living and serving in Tamale in northern Ghana. My wife and I serve as what's considered, I guess, support missionaries. Mm-hmm. We're not actually doing the translation, but provide support to those who are. So I do computer support, and Allie works with parents that are homeschooling, and then also homeschooling our own kids, which being wife and mother, I'm sure she'll tell you more about, keeps her keeps her pretty busy. So that's what we've been doing.
Let's go back in time and talk about where this all began. Now, I know as classmates, we all met at Concordia University in River Forest, now Concordia, Chicago. And that's where this family is started as well, where Paul and Allie met. But let's go back a little bit further. Allie, let's talk about your background, and then we're going to talk more about Paul's background as well, because this is a second generation of Federwitz family serving as missionaries. Now, Allie, you grew up in Ohio, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Northeastern Ohio in Akron.
Akron. And came to Concordia University, plans of
being a teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Since I was three, I wanted to be a teacher, so that was the place to go.
And so studied at Concordia University. Along the way, you met this young man and everything. Well, you're still a teacher.
I still am a teacher, but definitely in a different capacity. I did teach in the classroom for 5 years before we joined LBT and went overseas, so I did fulfill that dream and part of my calling as well.
Very good. So served as a teacher for 5 years, and then and then you all, somewhere along the way, did you get married before you were teaching or right around?
Right after we graduated in 2000, mm-hmm. and in 2001 we were married.
And then, and you knew all along, before you guys got married, that the plan was to serve as missionaries, right?
Yes, Paul made that quite clear from the very beginning of our relationship, which I'm very grateful for. But it did take a while for me to come around to that. The idea of short-term missions was always in my heart, and just thought mm-hmm. that maybe summer times would allow for that. But as to do it as a career, it took a little bit of time for me to come around to that. But it's truly my calling as well.
But it was, as you said, it was probably very clear from the very beginning, probably before the first date. Huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, it was quite clear before our first date what his intentions were.
Well, let's talk about why that was so important to you. Why is serving as a missionary so important to you? Let's talk about where you grew up.
Well, you could say I was born into the organization. It's usually the best method of recruitment. My parents were missionaries with Lutheran Bible Translators in Liberia, mm-hmm. and that's where I was born. And so that's what I knew growing up. My parents kept us very involved in what they were doing, and obviously where they were.
Yeah.
We were in a small village that didn't even have a road to it. So there was no way to separate work and family, and they just did a great job of combining the two and making us involved. So
you were very involved. You understood. You had a good picture of what was going on. What's the life of missionaries? Now, what did your parents do with as missionaries with Lutheran Bible Translators? What was their primary task?
Okay, so my dad worked on translation mm-hmm. With Bella or Kua language in Liberia, And so he worked on translation. My mom was not only wife and mother and homeschooler for four kids, she also worked on literacy. And so it was very much a part of everything that we saw, weekends, whatever, you know, we were involved in what was going on.
So you grew up in Liberia, spent, how long were you, at what age did you move out of Liberia?
Let's see, I was about 15, mm-hmm. When, we moved to Southern California for my dad to work on a PhD program. That's a little bit of a culture change. and then, I mean, even in college, so, you know, right from California, I went to college, as you mentioned, in, mm-hmm. in River Forest. But even with that, like in college, I went back a couple times during college. We went back after college. So I guess I've never felt like I've fully left Liberia. even now, with working in Ghana, I go to Liberia every year for computer support needs. So it's still very much a part of my life and who I am.
How has Liberia changed over the years from when you grew up there as a child?
Wow. A lot. I mean, there was 14 or more years of civil war. Mm-hmm. Ebola has made the news. That's still very much going on in Liberia, even though we don't hear about it so much here in the U.S. anymore. A lot of people have died from that. So, yeah, it's
a lot of changes.
A lot has changed, but the people are still the people.
Yeah.
So home is where your heart is. It's not necessarily the buildings and, sure. and what else.
Have you had a chance to see the work that your parents did, see some of the fruit of the work that your parents did in Liberia?
Yes. I mean, you see, and I guess that's kind of why I'm also involved in it. When you see people being able to read the Bible mm-hmm. in their own language, and even you have pastors that have gone to seminary and they've studied the Bible, but they've studied it in English or in another language, and then you see them read it for the first time in their own language, and it's things just become alive. Mm-hmm. It becomes a real book. It becomes more of a living thing, and so that's really exciting to see.
Well, let's talk about the road to back to Ghana. So you came back to the United States around age 15 and studied here in the United States, finished high school, and then studied at Concordia University. What was your plan going into Concordia University?
I went to do a computer science degree. My interest is in computers. It still is, even more so probably than it ever was. And so I did the computer science degree, but realizing that my interest wasn't necessarily in staying in the U.S. and getting a job, but actually going back and using that. During college, actually, I had the opportunity to go back for two summers and do computer courses for people that were working with translation. You know, here in our school system, we get used to computer classes are part of it. Mm-hmm. But the people that we're working with, those who are doing translation, nationals who are doing translation, that hasn't been part of the school system. And so I've been able to kind of step in and do the training, do the troubleshooting and that kind of stuff. So I knew that's what I wanted to do. But then during college, going back for those summer trips and being able to be actively involved in what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. it was just like, yes, this is, you know... Before there was no doubt, now it's an absolute. This is what I've been called to do.
You brought up a really good point that there are nationals involved in translation. Describe for us who all is involved in this translation process and what your role is in that.
Okay, so absolutely nationals need to be involved in the translation project. In fact, they're the ones that are usually doing it. When you have an expatriate coming from the United States... they can spend a lot of time with the language. They can evaluate it. They can learn it, mm-hmm. but they're never going to get to that same place where it's your heart language. And so it's so important for, people from that people group to do the translation. And so usually it's a group of people, anywhere from 2 to 5, or I've seen even more than that, that are working together on doing the translation. And there's so many steps in that. There's the initial translated text. There's going back and doing the exegetical work, that you might have somebody that's been trained as a pastor, or, you know, and that type of training to go back and look at the original Greek and Hebrew. You have the local pastors in the area that are involved in it. You have reviewers that are listening to mm-hmm. it. So you kind of, to count the number of people that are actually involved in a translation project, I don't know that you could actually ever count sure. that. Computers have become such a major part of that, saves a lot of time. I actually asked a translator one time how many versions of the translation they did. Let's just say, you know, Matthew chapter 1, how many times did they revise that before it actually got published? And his answer to me was, he, you know, off the top of his head, he's like, probably about 50 different wow. versions. You know, by the time you go through and you do the original translation, and then you check it with a bunch of people and you try to harmonize the text and all this work, that's a lot happening. Mm-hmm. You know, when I grew up, my dad and Chris Coola, who was the national translator, they did a lot by hand, and then my mom would type it up sometimes in the evening on this typewriter that they had converted to use the special characters. And I remember seeing all that. It's like you make one change, you got to retype the entire page. Hmm. Now with computers, it just helps to keep that process going a little bit easier. I could talk for an hour on this, but I'll kind of leave it at that. I mean, there's a lot more things that computers do, and my job is just to do the training, to do the support, make sure it's working. Africa is not an easy place for a computer to keep running. I'll just say that.
So we complain, you know, here in the Midwest when our internet speeds, you know, drop and things slow down and or, you know, we were without power for maybe an hour or something like that. So we have to go charge our phones in the car. But what's a typical day like? What is that like compared to what the digital life is like in Ghana?
Well, I don't want you to think that we also don't complain when our power goes out for an hour or our internet speed goes, but we're just more used to how to handle it when that happens.
So is it common to have power outages? Is it common for internet to go down? What are the common frustrations? What is digital life like where you are in Tamale?
Yeah. I mean, for power to go out, it's not uncommon. And when it goes out, you have no idea if it's going to be out for, you know, 5 minutes because they're switching something over, or if it's going to be out for a couple days. And so you have to work around that with battery systems or generators mm-hmm. and things like that. Laptops are so important because they have a built-in battery. So that at least keeps you going for another couple hours until you have to figure out what the power situation is going to be. So some of it's in, you know, some of my work is involved with that. In the past, solar systems were things that we depended on more, mm-hmm. and there's many areas of the world where that is still so important. Not as much in Ghana anymore, as it used to be. Internet, it's actually been interesting, even in the short time that we've been in Tamale, our internet when we first got there was, we had to go down to an internet cafe to do dial-up, and we could only send out email that was just plain text. That was basically all that we could make work. Internet has gotten a lot better, although it's still got a lot of frustrations to it. We can sometimes do an audio Skype, but beyond that, you're kind of pushing it. It's up and down. It's in and out. You just never know. Sometimes you keep a couple different internet providers. You keep like the phone chips for them so that if one goes down, you slap the phone chip in for another one. You know, see if that one might work for the next couple hours.
So you said phone chips. So you're using, what type of connection are you using for internet then? Using like a WiMAX or something like that, or like a wireless?
We're dependent on a cell phone system. So, you know, here in the U.S., we depend on, you know, you have your mobile phone and you use that for internet when you're out of the house.
Right.
Well, that's what we're using for our house. So I've got, you know, a router set up with a modem that's using the cell phone system. That's what we're using for our house. The office that I was working at, that's what we're using because some of that infrastructure wasn't necessarily there. We actually kind of skipped
sure.
generations. So we didn't really do too much with phone lines. We kind of jumped straight to cell phone system.
And how, that's an interesting point. I know I've talked with some of our other friends in various parts of Africa who've pointed that out as well, that the technology there kind of skipped the whole landline thing and went right to cell phones. I know when contacting some of the guests mm-hmm. that here's my cell phone number. Landlines are kind of non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, even with media, distribution of media, we kind of went straight from like cassette tapes to mm-hmm. micro SD cards. We completely skipped CDs. So that's how it is. You know, like the new technology comes out, it's actually better for that environment. And so we just jump straight to that. And that's what happens.
So technology is certainly an important part of the work of Lutheran Bible translators. And your key responsibilities are helping make sure that the computers are functioning properly so they can stay on task when it comes to translation.
Yeah, that. I also work with our organization on just information management. I mean, you mm-hmm. think about that with any company, any organization needs to also manage their own internal stuff.
Sure.
And so that's been something I've been able to jump in as well. So I love my job because it's like sometimes I'm working maybe even with a solar system or a generator, and then I'm working with like an internet connection or trying to get somebody's computer working, or I'm, you know, doing training. And then I'm working on, you know, information management stuff for our organization worldwide. It keeps me very interested and plugged in.
I was going to say, something tells me it never gets boring.
No. Nope.
Well, let's talk about from between college, those college years, and then going to getting your assignment and going to Ghana. So you knew that you were planning on, you wanted to go back as a missionary. You knew, Ellie, that that's going to be your life as well. How did your family respond when you started talking about being a missionary and serving overseas?
I think it was shocking, actually, that for them to hear that from us. My family has always been extremely supportive.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly wish that what we did was perhaps maybe next door to where they are. My mom's also probably listening, so. But they have always been extremely supportive of our family and uh-huh. just loving and supporting us and being interested in our work. So although, you know, it's hard, especially with the distance,
sure.
I couldn't ask for a better support system.
And that makes a difference. Having that support makes it, I couldn't imagine trying to be a missionary and knowing that you don't have support. Having that support certainly makes a difference. So you trained as a teacher, served as a teacher for a while, and Paul, you studied in computers, and then both completed your degrees, worked a little bit, and then what was that, what were the next steps to becoming missionaries to serve in Ghana with LBT?
There's a basic application process and some interviews and, mm-hmm. and other things that we go through. And we had kind of decided once we got married, we'd like to be in the U.S. for about 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, try to grow up just a little bit and just be married and, you know,
sure.
those kinds of things. So after that 5-year period, we started the initial application process. We also attended a linguistics school in Dallas, the Graduate Institute of Applied Linguistics, which is what the majority of translators and literacy workers go through. Especially if I can speak on Paul's behalf, he wanted to make sure he knew what the translators would be mm-hmm. doing so he could better support their work. And I went to just, I went through most of the courses as well, just in preparation for that.
What did you learn? What do you learn when you're studying linguistics?
Sure. You learn how to learn a language of any kind. You learn the International Phonetic Alphabet. Paul even went into some of the basics of translation. You learn how to analyze languages. You think you know grammar until you go and you find that you know nothing about grammar, you know, parsing out things and terminology I never learned in high school. And I was an English major too in college. So just things that I had never heard of. You go into complete brain overload, actually. But it's fascinating.
It really is. I mean, as she said, you know, with like grammar, it's like you go in and you analyze these you have to learn how to analyze language because the languages that we work in it's not like we're going to go work in French or German, where it's a language that has been analyzed. There's a writing system and all that. The languages that we work in, most of them have never been even written down. And so you're working on an alphabet. You're working on the grammar and all that. And it was interesting that she mentioned grammar, because that was probably the most difficult class I've ever taken in my life.
Coming from a guy who's taken how many classes in information?
A lot. But it was probably the most interesting I've ever had. It was difficult to look at grammar that way. But on the other hand, I felt like if I had learned grammar that way in school, I might have done better with it.
I think that's absolutely true, just looking at it from another angle. Yeah.
So we should all have a foundation in linguistics, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Sure.
How did that affect your teaching and your approach as an educator, Allie?
I don't think so. I don't think it did. I actually did go into brain overload. I was very pregnant with Hannah at the time. And so I was a little distracted on things. But I just think to understand what our coworkers have to learn, absorb, and then apply, that was, I think, a really important lesson for me.
Very much so. And I can identify with that, having studied Greek and a little bit of Hebrew in college and working alongside with pastors as a DCE. I have appreciation for what they do when studying, you know, doing exegesis and studying the scriptures in the original languages. I have an appreciation for that. Now, my Greek skills are horrible. I know just enough to be dangerous. But it makes a difference when studying the scriptures, you know, with especially when our pastors are studying them in the original languages. It makes a difference for me, and I have much more of an appreciation for that, for the original languages. So I see what you're saying with that. So you studied linguistics in Dallas, and then where did you go from there?
So throughout that time when we were in Dallas, we continue to have open conversations with our supervisors at LBT. And then that's when the assignment possibilities come up. And Ghana was on the table with another location, but Ghana was appealing to us because it allowed Paul to work directly with a national Bible translation organization. Other options involved more direct support, computer support with other missionaries, but we really wanted to be in with the culture and a part of what was going on. So Ghana kind of stood out to us from the beginning, and we really just kind of felt as each step got closer that that's really where we were supposed to be. And then came the process of raising support, both prayer and financial supporters. And that was about a 9-month process for us. And
speaking of 9-month processes, wasn't there a little blessing coming along here?
That's right. So Hannah came about 3 months into that first year of support raising. And we stayed put for a few weeks, but then by the time she was 7 weeks old, we were back on the road. So Hannah knows the car and a car seat quite well.
Yeah. World traveler. So you raised support, and then when did you get your assignment? When did you know that you were going to Ghana to serve in this position?
So it was actually during the linguistics training that we had those discussions. So that was actually set at the time that we were accepted by LBT. Because actually, you know, even the linguistics training is part of the process of being accepted into the organization. You know, how are we doing with that? Is this something that we're able to do? And so at that point, that's when it was set that we were going to Ghana. And so when we were going around raising support, as Allie said, both prayer and financial, we were able to tell people this is where we're going, and kind of get people on board with that.
This is where we're going. This is what we'll be doing. This is what we're involved in. So anything else significant before you actually got on the plane?
I think that's pretty significant, getting on the plane.
had you visited before you actually went to your new home in Ghana?
We did very, very briefly as a part of a trip to Liberia. We got to work alongside Paul's mom in Liberia. Paul did some computer support work. She gave me a little bit of necessary busy work to do to help in Liberia. But for me, it was just a really important trip to see what Paul calls home. And so we stopped through Ghana on the way. We actually got up to the north to Tamale and visited Gilbert, where we have been working for the last 8 years. So I don't believe at that time we knew we were going to Ghana for sure, but we knew it was a possibility.
Mm-hmm. So you went back home. Paul, what was it like to go back home to Liberia?
It's hard to answer that question because as you know, we talked about things were so different because of the war but it's still home, you know, it's still where I grew up. And as Ali said, you know, it gave her a chance to get to see a different side of me. Mm-hmm. Because that's where I'm from. There's a lot of things that make me click.
Sure.
Having grown up there. And it's like, she saw some of those things. It's like, oh, that's why he does that, or, you know, that type of thing. So, it was great to go home, but during college, as I said, it's like I'd been going back. So I'd never really been away for more than maybe 5 years at that point.
As other missionary families, other missionary kids have said, when they come to the U.S., they're going to the land of their passport.
Yes. Yep.
And so to be back home, to be back in Africa, to be back in Liberia, and now going to, with the opportunity to go to Ghana to serve there, I'm sure that was probably just building up all kinds of feelings and excitement. You finally get to Ghana, feet on the ground. We're going to talk about what happens once you get there when we come back from this break. So stick around for more Faith and Family. So we talk with the Federowitz family as they are serving as missionaries with Lutheran Bible Translators in Ghana. Stick around for more Faith and Family after this break.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
My friends at National Right to Life have come out with some very encouraging numbers showing the pro-life side is winning the nation's battle over legal abortion on demand. Since the number of abortions peaked a couple of decades ago, the pro-life movement is saving more than 500,000 unborn babies each year. This means the efforts of Life Issues Institute and other pro-life organizations are saving a baby every minute, 24/7. And the news will only get better because of the November election that put in more pro-life candidates on the state and federal levels. When you vote pro-life, babies are being saved from death and their parents spared from the emotional trauma abortion so often brings. So make sure you always vote for pro-life candidates.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF in my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcome new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit lcef.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listening to worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth or sync up to listen in your car while driving anywhere. There are many easy ways to listen to worldwidekfuo.org. On the air, online, and on demand, the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Jesus and the Bible exhorts us to agreement in all biblical teachings. I'm Rod Zwanitzer, one of the four hosts of Concord Matters, a show with that worthy goal, Concord, inviting you to join us Saturday mornings at 10 and repeated Tuesdays at 2 p.m., as well as 24/7 on demand.
Listen to Concord Matters on the Messenger of Good News, KFUO.
This is a newly born radio station, KFUO.
Those were the first words spoken on KFUO. But before those words could even be broadcast, it took a group of volunteers and supporters to cover the cost of constructing our very first radio facility.
On this occasion, we also wish to express our hearty thanks to all Christians who have given or pledged their contributions toward the erection and upkeep of this station.
Since those historic words, KFUO has relied on supporters to bring us through our first 90 years. And KFUO continues to need your support to move forward into our next. Will you prayerfully consider supporting the worldwide outreach of KFUO with a gift today? For a suggested gift of $90 or more, we'll say thank you with a Collector's Edition 90th Anniversary I Lutheran t-shirt. To give your gift, contact Joni or Mary at 314-996-1512. Thank you for your continued support and prayers for worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We are talking today with the Federowitz family, serving as missionaries in Ghana. They're with Lutheran Bible Translators, and I have enjoyed the conversation so far. Just before we went to break, we were talking with Paul and Ellie about preparing to go serve in Ghana with Lutheran Bible Translators, and at this point in time, the Federowitz family consisted of Paul, Ellie, and Hannah, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And the other twinkle in your eye, those other two twinkles in your eye weren't here yet. But let's talk about, that flight to Ghana with a baby. Let's talk about going to Ghana.
Well, Hannah was less than a year old when we went, so she still did a lot of sleeping. I would say that traveling in general is a little stressful. You want to make sure you have all you need, all the paperwork and everything, getting on and off of the plane. But I don't think the actual trip itself was anything, eventful. We were able to take a direct flight from New York to Accra, the capital city of Ghana. That was kind of a new thing that Delta was doing at the time. And I think that really made it quite easy on us.
How long of a flight was that?
I think it was about 10 hours.
11.
Wow. So it's long, but there's something to be said for not switching planes or having layovers.
Absolutely. All right. So you get on the ground. You're in Accra. How far is that from where you would be settling in?
Accra is about 400 miles from Tamale, which doesn't seem that long, but it is a solid 12-hour drive. It's a very interesting road. In fact, we actually get bored on the roads here. But it's about a 12-hour drive up to Tamale. So we spent a little bit of time in Accra first before heading up.
Now, what do you mean by very interesting road?
There's always... Well, you just don't know when the pavement's gonna be
there?
Nice to drive on, when it's gonna be there, dirt roads. Then you just have all kinds of things like people and goats and chickens and I don't know. You never know what's gonna come. And it's true, we do get bored driving here because you know exactly what's gonna come.
I've seen video clips from the photojournalist for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, Eric Lunsford, shared a video clip of his drive in or out of Accra one day, and it was a good thing he had a seatbelt on.
Yeah.
It was more like an airplane ride with turbulence.
I think that's probably a good way to describe it. And actually, things around Accra have gotten a lot better, but still, Accra is Accra.
Okay, so you go about 400 miles, you said, to Tamale. And your first week there, what is the first week like?
I think it's a little surreal feeling. Your eyes are just really big with, okay, we've been planning, we've been preparing, we've been packing, and now we're here, and you just try to take it all in at once. Plus, leaving Ohio winter in January and getting to Tamale almost the hottest time of the year, it's quite an adjustment. It was over 100 degrees when we got to Tamale.
Earlier when I said it was 89 in Tamale, you said, oh, it's the cool season.
It's the cooler time of year. It's the middle of the afternoon there right now, so that's a decent temperature. But in the evening this time of year, it'll, get down to the upper 60s, which means sweatshirts and socks and hot cocoa.
Now, did you have a home already, or did you have to spend time finding home? What did you do the first couple of weeks, the first month that you're there?
So, yeah, thankfully, my brother actually worked in that area. And so he had worked with the organization that we were working with Gilbert, and had found a home for us. He let us borrow some of their furniture, so there's a little bit of furniture in the house. You know, you can't just go down to a furniture store and pick out what you need. You know, a lot of it needs to be made and stuff like that. So thankfully, that kind of helped us get going right away, rather than having to run around and deal with that. We were able to do that a couple months later and extend that out. We also did some additional training once we got to Tamale. There's a place there called the Tamale Institute of Cross-Cultural Studies. And that was a great opportunity for us to, you know, we'd already been going through linguistics training to learn how to learn a language, to learn how to learn a culture, but then now to be able to go through this course for about a month of focusing more on Ghana and working with people that had been there for decades, and were able to kind of share some insights with us, do a little bit more language learning in Dagbani, which is the language that's spoken predominantly in Tamale. So that was kind of a, you know, a little bit more training before we actually show up at the office and do other things.
Now, you mentioned Dagbani being the predominant language. How many languages, just within the community where you live, how many languages do you encounter on a regular basis?
I would actually say that that's quite difficult to know. Within Ghana itself, there's over 70 different languages. And we find that in Tamale, you'll get a mix of all different language groups. Being a larger city, and especially in the community where we have lived, on kind of on the northern end of Tamale, it seems kind of like almost a melting pot of the different cultures and languages. I would say two main languages we would encounter regularly, especially in just greeting people. Dagbani, and then like Akan would be what we would hear most often. And we're not experts at distinguishing between them either. So sometimes we just smile and hope that we're getting it, you know, correct.
So what was life like getting settled in Tamale?
Quite challenging in the very beginning. Like I said, you're planning and you're preparing and you're informing those who are supporting you of what you hope to do when you get there. And then you land and it's a reality. And now you're doing what you've been talking about for the last however many years. I would say that it was quite a challenge. You know, you can do a lot of preparation, but it's not until you're in the midst of it that you really know what you're going to do and what you need to do. I would say it took us a good 9 months to the first full year to start to feel like, okay, now we're in some sort of a rhythm and we're going to be okay. But the first term overall, that first 3 years is quite challenging and stressful, and just a lot of adjustments.
And I know many missionaries that I've talked with have talked about making that cultural change and the adjustment to a different culture.
Sure, there's lots of culture shock that occurs.
I didn't have coffee this morning. Now, How did each of you experience that? I know some have said like 6 months in or somewhere around there, you experience it to some degree. I would imagine that each of you probably had a different experience when it comes to that.
I would say quite different. For me, I don't think I can really put it into words, but it was right at that 9 month mark that you wonder, am I going to be able to do what we said we were going to do? You know, are we going to be able to continue? And you do a lot of, you know, reflection. You do a lot of observation of things around you. And for me, what it involved is when I kind of hit that lower point of now, what do I do? How do I continue? Is you just put a plan in place to get through that day and the next day. And you start kind of building systems and routines for yourself and for your family. And then you just get going again.
That sounds so very much like Allie, doesn't it?
Yes, let's make a list and let's accomplish it.
Paul, what about for you? Having grown up in Liberia, living, coming back to the U.S. for a while, how was there a culture shock for you? What was it like?
There was some, though. I don't know that it was so much a culture thing. I mean, Ghana and Liberia, they are different places.
Sure.
There's a lot of similarities in the culture, but then there's quite a number of differences as well. I don't know that I had as much culture shock in that way as it was, you know, growing up in Liberia, I didn't have to worry about things. You know, my parents took care of stuff. And so I think it was actually more of a shock that, you know, now I have a family and it's my responsibility to make sure that we have electricity, we have water, and we have, you know, make sure that there's food on the table and things like that. And I'd been warned about that and it was good to know that, but it's different when all of a sudden it's like, you know, growing up, I only have the good memories of all, you know, all the fun that I had. And now
climbing trees and playing.
Yeah, exactly. And now all of a sudden it's my responsibility. There's nobody else taking care of that for me.
So that was, so part of it is living in a different culture. Part of it is just that change in vocation in life and the new responsibilities that come with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're settled in, you go to work, more blessings come along, the Federowitz family expands. Over the next few years, what is life like? What the work that you're doing, what's life like at home? Let's talk about those things. What's life like at home as the Federowitz family grows and then we start talking about school?
Sure. Well, I would say as the days and the months go on, you know, you start to feel a little bit more confident. Mm-hmm. I'm learning how to substitute local ingredients for familiar comfort foods. You know, Saturday night pizza nights become a routine in our home and something that we all look forward to. And then
we got to start there. What is pizza like now? Pizza is probably not a regular staple for the local folks, is it?
That's correct, though. I think you'd be quite shocked to find how many restaurants serve pizza, not only in the capital city but up north where we are. I feel like pizza's kind of popping out everywhere. I don't know, maybe they came to visit one time. I'm not really sure.
I think that's possible. We have good pizza on Saturday night.
Thank you.
What is pizza like at your household? What's pizza like in Ghana?
Not all that different. My husband complimented my pizza, so then I'm going to say I make really good pizza. I'm American. It's American pizza. When people come over, we ask them to bring the pepperoni that's in those, you know, vacuum sealed that doesn't need to be refrigerated. So sometimes we ask people to bring us pizza toppings. Otherwise, yeah. It's any vegetable we can find.
Sure.
or plain. Cheese is not a local ingredient. It's an imported item. So it's not as cheesy as most pizzas, but that's kind of our splurge, you know?
Sure.
Something that we just look forward to each week and we enjoy.
Well, you're visiting here in St. Louis, and many St. Louisans have a specific type of cheese that they like on their pizza. It's called Provel. It's weird. It's not even real cheese, I don't think. but we love it. And so maybe you'll get to experience that while you're here in St. Louis. And I don't know if really isn't imported. It's not a local thing anywhere else. So it's probably what, you know, if St. Louisans were to go outside of St. Louis, we'd have to be in the same boat. It's not a local thing. We'd have to have it imported.
Sure.
Okay. So pizza, what about like just groceries and things like that? How's life like that different or alike?
So we have grocery stores and then there's market. And when people think of other countries, especially developing nations, I think that they have their own pictures of what a market may look like. And I shop both places. Market's going to have, you know, the fruits and the vegetables. It's going to have the grains by the, you know, the bowl full. Mm-hmm. Our grocery stores are going to be about the size of, let's say, a small gas station convenience store, and going to have some of the more imported things, dry goods as well, but imported things like pasta. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a variety of oils and canned goods and things there. So some of them have refrigerators too, where we can get our cheese and butter even.
What are some of the common local foods? What's a typical meal in Ghana?
Well, maybe I could have my kids tell you what their favorite things are.
Yeah.
Okay, so all right. Hannah's favorite is what?
Yam.
Okay, Hannah just likes yam in general, and yam is a staple. Please do not think sweet potato. I think Google knows what yam looks like, but it's a long, probably about 2 foot long tuber. Brown skin, kind of like a potato, but very tough, almost bark-like, and super starchy on the inside. It turns colors almost as soon as you peel it.
And Hannah, how do you like yams prepared? Do you like them baked, or how do you like them prepared?
Well, in Ghana, they mash them, mm-hmm. and then they make them into balls and just serve them with soup. That's the way I like them.
Uh-huh.
It's called fufu there.
Mm-hmm. Fufu. Mm-hmm. Very good. So you like it? What kind of soup is it served? What kind of soup do you like it with?
Tell the name. Mm-hmm.
Groundnut soup. Groundnuts in Ghana are just like peanuts here.
Uh-huh.
So they're just the same thing.
Right. Since peanuts grow in the ground, they're mm-hmm. a ground nut. And so then it's, then the ground nuts are ground into a peanut butter almost mm-hmm. and with tomatoes and other spices.
Sounds good.
And all the sauces we refer to as soups. So you would think of it as a sauce.
I see. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, let's go over to Levi. What's your favorite food?
Banku.
Banku.
Can you describe banku?
probably not. It's actually got a little bit of a consistency similar to fufu.
Some people call it a Play-Doh consistency, but I would like it to be more appetizing than that.
Yeah. but it has more of a corn base than the yam base.
I see. Is corn common? Is that a common crop?
Not sweet corn, though. Mm-hmm. Like a white, starchy, almost field corn.
Gotcha. Okay. Banku.
Banku.
Is it served hot or cold? How do you eat it?
Hot.
Hot. Very good. And do you like anything with it or just plain?
Soup.
Soup. What kind?
Groundnut.
Groundnut soup. Everybody likes groundnut soup.
Yeah, it's quite delicious.
Mm-hmm. All right. Eden? Let's go to Eden. What is your favorite food?
Fufu.
Fufu. Another fufu fan, huh? What do you like with fufu?
The groundnut soup.
Groundnut soup. Everybody likes groundnut soup. So you mentioned this is basically peanut butter, right?
Yeah, so it's like a natural peanut butter.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, you know, I've had some Asian dishes that come with like a peanut sauce.
Yes.
It's kind of similar to that?
It would be thicker. And then, like I said, with a mm-hmm. tomato base and probably a little bit of hot pepper, too.
Mm, spicy. All right, Paul, what's your favorite local dish?
I like a lot of them, although fufu is kind of our family favorite.
Yeah.
I think because you don't get it all the time.
Sure.
It takes a lot of work to make it. And so it's kind of one of those special things. It's like, oh, we're having fufu today. You know, we haven't had that for a month or more.
It's quite a beautiful process that they make it, and they pound it in a large mortar and pestle. And it's kind of rhythmic, and you have to know what you're doing or you'll get your hand smashed as the pestle comes down and you're stirring it up. But I would say my favorite is actually fried yam, but I'm a French fry girl and they're kind of in the same family, but we eat it with a groundnut powder. It's called kuli kuli, and they take all the oil out of the peanuts and then they grind it up just like a flour, and then usually you dip the yam in that and maybe like a tomato oil onion sauce and some fried plantain as well.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not something you can just go out and get here in the U.S. though, so it'll be a while before you get that again, huh?
It'll be a while.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk more about family life at home. We've talked about your favorite foods, and you all are students at home. It sounds like mom's your teacher, huh?
Yeah.
Your favorite teacher?
Yes.
And their least favorite simultaneously.
Levi, what do you like to study? What's your favorite subject? Math. You like math? Mm-hmm. Very good. What are you working on right now in math? What are you learning?
How to make 10.
How to make 10?
But I'm now reviewing like the whole book now on pages where there's different like numbers from different lessons.
Yeah, he's at the end of a lesson. And so at the end of the lesson, he reviews everything he's learned up until that point.
Very good. Very good. Now, let's see. Eden, are you studying yet?
Are you going to school?
Yes.
Yes. What's your favorite thing about school? What do you like to learn in school?
Usually, Eden, I'm going to speak for her.
She is shy.
Yeah, she does. That's okay. She does. She likes to kind of sort out mm-hmm. different things. So if I give her a bowl of a variety of objects, sure. she likes to parse them out. She's an organizational girl. I think she might get that from me. But Eden likes to just be involved in anything that we do, uh-huh. no matter at what age level it is.
Very good. Very good. And Hannah, what is your favorite subject in school?
Art.
What do you love about art? What do you enjoy most in art?
Painting.
Aha. Uh-huh. Do you have some great paintings at home? You've been working on any paintings?
No. I've been too busy.
Yeah. Well, we have a great art museum here in St. Louis. If you have time, there's some great paintings there as well. Well, it sounds like you all are hard at work as students. Now, how are you doing school since you're on the road this year? It looks like you brought some work along with you today. You're going to be studying a lot while you're in the car traveling across the U.S.?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. some reading.
So maybe you can tell what's our plan for doing school while we're traveling around the country.
We're going to be studying each state as we pass through it or as we're in it.
Very good. And so you're in Missouri right now. We were talking about this earlier. What have you learned about Missouri so far? What's the state capital?
Jefferson City.
Very good.
That famous landmark that we talked about?
The Gateway Arch.
Very good. Very good. Well, it sounds like you take advantage of every opportunity as a family, as an educator, to learn and to study wherever you go. Allie, as an educator now, as a home educator in Ghana, what have you enjoyed about being a teacher at home and helping others? I know that's part of your work with LBT is also supporting other families who are doing home education.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually quite surprised how much our whole family just loves and enjoys the homeschooling process. Mm-hmm. We knew that that's what we would be doing. It felt like the only option for us, but to also be able to enjoy it was just kind of a surprise, but a wonderful bonus to have. With my education background, the hope was that I could, you know, help families troubleshoot any areas mm-hmm. of need. But what really has happened is all of the families have kind of come together just to kind of support one another and troubleshoot and help each other out and talk about what's working for them and what's not and offer suggestions. So it's really not so much that I was sent to be actually as a consultant, not so much that I've, you know, really kind of spearheaded that, but there's just been a community mm-hmm. that's grown out of it where we sure. work together and help one another.
With just about a minute left, let's talk about the community where you live and the people you've gotten to know. Who are some of the local people that you've gotten to know there mm-hmm. in Tamale?
You know, one of the nice things about working with a national organization, I work there with Gilbert, the Ghana Institute of Linguistics, Literacy, and Bible Translation. Most of the office is made up of Ghanaians, and that's been a great experience for me, working and learning. Mm-hmm. We have tea break every day, and that's probably my favorite time of the day, just to enjoy company with them. So in many cases, most of the local people that we are involved with are actually those who work with me at Gilbert.
And I would say, honestly, for our whole family, they have just really kind of taken us all in together. They mm-hmm. they love us. They care for us. They ask about us. So even the kids and I will go up for tea break just to visit with people during that time.
That's great. Well, how can our listeners find out more about your work and find out more about LBT, the work that you're doing, and follow you and support you?
Okay. So LBT is www.lbt.org. So that's their website. You'll find us information about us there under the missionary section. We also, I want to say maintain, but we're not always good about keeping it updated, a blog on WordPress. So P.A. Federwitz, P-A-F-E-D-E-R-W-I-T-Z .wordpress.com. So some information there about kind of where we're traveling right now, contact, how to get a hold of us. you're not going to see any great like missionary articles per se, because usually what I write about is just technology that I'm interested in that's coming out.
Very good. Well, we'll post a link to the LBT page, to the Federwitz family on Lutheran Bible Translators. I want to say thanks to the Federwitz family so much. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today. In studio today, Paul and Allie and Hannah and Levi and Eden, thanks so much for being my guest today on Faith and Family. It's been great to have you all here today. Thanks so much for being my guest.
Oh, you're welcome. We're so glad to be here.
You're welcome.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word.
Online and on demand.